Wells Fargo Insurance Services versus, I hope I pronounced this right, Galeotto. So as you're getting settled, I'm sure you're aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. The respondent will have 15 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So just collect your thoughts. You can approach the microphone. I believe the podium goes up and down. Apparently we spent $300,000 on that and didn't renew the air conditioning. So there you go. So whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone. Tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please, and you may begin. Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel, I'm Amy Schwartz of Ballard's Bar, representing appellant Wells Fargo Insurance Services USA, or WIFIS for short. This is an appeal from summary judgment. WIFIS seeks not only to vacate the judgment, but also for an order in its entry of an order in its favor with respect to Mr. Galeotto. The issues in this case are ones of pure law. There are no issues of disputed fact. This case centered.
You would agree, Ms. Schwartz, the issue today is whether or not, as the district court ruled on the sole issue of adequate consideration. So if we agreed with you and reversed, I know what you'd like to do, but it seems to me the district court didn't rule on these other issues that respondent was arguing in terms of breadth and scope and standing and things like that.
Well, with respect to standing, the district court did order, it did make that. There's, I think, page 4, footnote 1 or maybe 2 of the order talks about the corporate relationship, essentially how ACO Brokerage Holdings, which was the indirect parent of Accordia, merged with and into Wells Fargo merger entity, and then later how that over a series of different corporate transactions and name changes and the like all got rolled up into WIFIS. And so I think that issue has actually already been decided by the district court. So with respect to the standing argument, I think that's gone. With respect to the scope argument, that's an issue of law that's really before the court. In respondents' briefing here, I believe they make that argument at pages 36 and 37 on essentially whether, you know, after mergers and corporate changes, whether restrictive covenants can be enforceable. That's also just an issue of law that I think is properly before the court. I think those are the bases that they say that it needs to be remanded to the district court for further consideration. And in my view, they're already decided. Although obviously if the court thinks that there are further issues that need to be decided and that weren't adequately decided or issues of fact, remand could be proper.
Well, I mean, isn't when we're talking about the scope of the agreement, isn't that fact dependent upon the type of industry and what products are involved and a number of other facts? I mean, what would be necessary in that industry to restrict the agreement or not restrict the agreement?
Sure. I think the scope argument that they're making is that over time, you know, Accordia of Minnesota, which was the original organization, over this corporate transactions grew in size. So the customers with which Mr. Galeotto was prohibited from soliciting, that volume changed over time.
Well, and again, it's very fact-specific, correct? I mean, as to what is reasonable and what is not reasonable. And insofar as it's dependent upon facts, that's not something this court can do. Am I correct?
I don't believe so with respect to this argument, and here's why. In Minnesota, not restrictive covenants are assignable. That's the Slitterman case and its progeny. And when you have an assignment of a non-solicitation provision, and there is an assignment provision in that agreement, that expansion of the customer base is consented to. You can see that in Judge Schiltz's holding in the King case. And so here, there is an assignment provision. Mr. Galeotto did consent to it, and he thus consented to the increased scope. Now, Minnesota courts, of course, interpret contracts to give meaning to their terms. Here, as a matter of law, Mr. Galeotto consented to this increased scope by agreeing to the assignment provision, and therefore we don't think there are factual issues on it. That said, if the court would, obviously remand is a fine remedy as well.
Well, it beats losing.
Sure.
Or beats affirming, excuse me.
I wanted to ask you about the second restrictive covenant. Do you agree that that is a new contract of employment?
You mean, when you say the new restrictive covenant, you mean the Accordia agreement that was signed on January 18th of 2000? Yes, that is a new, this is not continued employment. This is a new employment relationship. W.A. Lang and Accordia entered into an asset sale on the evening of Thursday, January 13th. Before the closing of the asset sale, W.A. Lang was a company, Accordia was a different company, and then on the morning of January 14th, Accordia starts doing business, and then you get into the email discussion.
Ms. Schwartz, does the record indicate, let's say for the sake of argument, Mr., I hope I pronounce it right, Galeotto said, forget this, I'm not signing anything. Obviously, he's not then employed. Does the record indicate then who would have been responsible for paying him from the 1st to the 13th?
Yes, he would be employed by W.A. Lang.
Okay.
And here's the thing, just as a point of clarification.
And where would I look for that? Is that in the merger agreement or where?
Well, no, the merger.
Or the asset purchase agreement?
Sorry, pardon me. The asset purchase agreement says that the employees only become employees of Accordia if they accept Accordia's offer of employment. And there's a definition of transferred employees in, I believe, section 5.5A of the purchase agreement. And so if he hadn't accepted, if he had said, you know what, Accordia, I don't want to be a part of your organization, he would still have been bound by the W.A. Lang restrictive covenant, because remember, that was assigned as part of the asset sale. And he would have been employed by Accordia, would have been employed by W.A. Lang, because he had rejected Accordia's offer of employment. I want to spend a second just talking briefly about why restrictive covenants are important, because, you know, I think we all know that they're frequently invalidated because they're frequently used for improper purposes. But this is not an abusive restrictive covenant, and it was not used for an improper purpose. Restrictive covenants are important in sales organizations because they're the only way a sales organization can protect its investment in customer relationships and goodwill. WIFIS and its predecessors spent millions of dollars on Galeotto for him to develop customer goodwill. The only way to protect that goodwill and stop Galeotto from selling it to the highest bidder was through a restrictive covenant. And so I want to talk about the district court's holding because it's a little bit complicated to understand, at least for me, and I want to make sure we're all on the same page. The restrictive covenant was part of an employment agreement that offered Galeotto both prospective employment with Accordia and 2 weeks of retroactive pay and benefits. Accordia offered the employment agreement on the morning of Friday, January 14th of 2000, the first day it was in business, and Galeotto returned it the next Tuesday, January 18th, 2000, which was the next business day because of the MLK Day holiday. The district court held that once Galeotto signed the employment agreement on January 18th of 2000, the retroactivity provision in the agreement meant that Galeotto was really employed by Accordia since January 1st of 2000. And the district court then held that that fiction created by the retroactivity provision meant that the offer wasn't ancillary to new employment because he was deemed by operation of the agreement to be employed by Accordia as of January 1st of 2000. So to say it another way, the district court used one of the benefits of the signed employment agreement, retroactive employment, to show that there was no benefit to the signed employment agreement, i.e. that employment was not ancillary to the offer. And that is clearly wrong as a matter of law. Immediately before signing the employment agreement, Galeotto was not employed by Accordia. Immediately after signing the employment agreement, Galeotto was employed by Accordia retroactive to January 1st, 2000. Thus Galeotto received something of value.
Is there a case you could cite us to where, I mean, it would seem like this would be a common situation.
You know, surprisingly not. The only case either side has ever found and cited on retroactive employment in the context of restrictive covenants is Soft Choice versus Schmidt. And Soft Choice versus Schmidt sided with us. In that case, you had a very...
Well, we'll see.
Well, I think it did, and here's why. And they don't say it's not helpful to us. I mean, it is. Essentially, in that case, you had a scenario where on January 7th of 2007, an employee interviewed for a promotion and was orally advised that same day on January 7th that he had received the promotion. And he was told that he would get a formal promotion document, which he did receive on January 16th of that year. And he signed and returned it on January 17th of that year, and it made the employment retroactive to January 2nd. And the district court was faced with a question of whether there was consideration. And the district court held, of course there is. Consideration exists when you have the real benefits and advantages of the employment or the promotion. And in that case, Johnson, the employee of that case, had received the benefit on January 17th, and thus that's when the consideration was exchanged. Here, same scenario, different dates, although all in January. And in this case, we have the situation where Galeotto did not receive the benefits of employment with Accordia on January 18th of 2000. He literally turned in his signed agreement and Carmela handed him a check. I mean, that is when he received the benefit of it. That's when he was enrolled in Accordia's like benefits, like healthcare and that type of thing. That's when he received everything. So yes, it was made retroactive to January 1st, but those real advantages weren't felt by Galeotto on January 1st. On January 1st of 2000, he was, of course, answering phones W.A. Lang, telling people that he worked for W.A. Lang, signing letters on W.A. Lang stationery. He was an employee of W.A. Lang prior to the closing of the asset sale, no doubt about it. I want to briefly touch, because I see I'm running low on time, new employment consideration. You know, we all know the law. New employment is consideration for an employment agreement if it's ancillary to the offer of employment. Here, you have a closing on the evening of Thursday, January 13th. On the morning of Friday, January 14th, Galeotto shows up at work, and at that time, he's still an employee of W.A. Lang. He hasn't received an offer from Accordia. And when he arrives at their office, there's an email waiting for him. It's that January 14th email that's cited all over in the record. And the email, which was an email to all more than 100 WA Lang employees, makes clear that you need to sign and return employment agreements in order to get your paycheck from Carmella. And, you know, there are no terms of employment in there. There's nothing that says, you know, here are your duties or compensation or benefits or really any part of the employment relationship in that email. It simply gives directions for how to sign and return employment agreements. And where you have an offer that incorporates by reference another document, that document is part of the offer. Moreover, when you have an offer that tells you that acceptance needs to be in a certain manner, for example, returning signed employment agreements to Carmella, you can only accept in that manner. And finally, and maybe most importantly, if you divorce the January 14th email from the employment agreement, there was no offer for Galeotto to accept. In order to be capable of acceptance, an offer has to contain the material terms of the agreement. The January 14th email doesn't contain a single term. It's an email to more than 100 people. All of the terms of employment, every last one, are in the employment agreement that he got shortly thereafter. There's, you know, the new employment was the consideration for the restrictive covenant. It wasn't foisted on Galeotto after he had already accepted a different offer. It was the only offer that was out there. Briefly, because I have 10 seconds, there's consideration via the release of the W.A. Lang restrictive covenant. That's set forth in the duties section of the employment agreement with Accordia. Couldn't have done the job if he hadn't waived, if it hadn't released him from it. And with respect to continued employment, of course, this is a long-term employee. He advanced through the ranks and made a lot of money as a result of it. He never would have had this job had he not accepted the employment agreement and signed it. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schwartz. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
May it please the court, counsel. Pamela Abate Dottillo on behalf of the respondents, Angelo Galeotto, and Kansas City Series of Lockton LLC. So you were very close on the pronunciation.
Well, there you go. I've often been called cannoli, so I figured I'd take a shot.
As this court knows, behind every non-compete case, behind that caption that appears on the top of the case, there is a person. There's a person whose life and whose career has been impacted by the non-compete agreement they signed. And in this case, the person is Angelo Galeotto. And I want to spend my first minute or two talking about the position he was in when he was offered that Accordia agreement. Mr. Galeotto was 33 years old. He was making $55,000 a year. He had worked for an underwriter in the insurance industry, but he made a big career move when he moved over to W.A. Lang in 1999 because that was his first job as a producer. We've cited in the record his testimony that he made no commissions during the time he worked for W.A. Lang because he essentially had no clients. This industry was new to him. He came to W.A. Lang because there was an opportunity for ownership. And he was told that after 5 years, the general rule was that producers would have an opportunity for ownership. And that's what was attractive to him about that position. He had two kids, sole income earner for his family. He's only at W. Lang for a few months before he learns that a much bigger insurance brokerage firm, Accordia, is W.A. Lang, and this is important to multiple issues in this case, but W.A. Lang was a small Minnesota-based insurance brokerage firm. They had only maybe 20 producers. Accordia was a national company. So Mr. Galeotto was told that W.A. Lang is in discussions with Accordia about a purchase. In late 1999, he is told by Mr. Weifel and Mr. Rechtin, who own 55% of W.A. Lang, that there would likely be a closing and that his job was safe and that everything would be the same after the closing. So Mr. Galeotto, with that statement in mind, shows up to work on January 14th, as any other day. He has a job on January 14th. And as of midnight on January 13th, W.A. Lange ceases to be in business. On pages 7 and 8 of our brief, we cite in the record where the court can find Mr. Rechtin and Mr. Weifel's statements in their depositions that as of the closing, as of midnight on January 13th, W.A. Lange had no employees and was out of business. The entity existed, but they were out of business, they were done transacting insurance business, and they had no employees. So when Mr. Galeotto showed up and began working on January 14th, he was working for Accordia. He couldn't be working for W.A. Lange. And when he showed up, he turned on his computer, opens his email, and here's an email from Gary Weifel that says, consistent with the messages he had received earlier, we are now Accordia. There is nothing in that email that says, now we're making you a new offer of employment, and so before you begin working, you're going to need to make a decision about whether you want this offer of employment, and here is the agreement for you to review and consider and sign. Instead, he says, we're now Accordia, we're going to call ourselves Accordia, and if you want your paycheck that you've already earned, you will need to sign an employment agreement.
Well, I just want to follow your argument, though. If everything remained the same, then he had already signed a non-compete agreement, and that non-compete agreement stayed in full force and effect. So how does that help your case?
So the W.A. Lange agreement, are you referring to that?
Right.
It helps my...
And if, in fact, he's working for a new employer, which no one's disputing, how can he do that with the W.A. Lange non-compete agreement in full force and effect? So...
He did have an agreement with W.A. Lange, so I'll answer that first part of the question first. There is no claim in this case based on the W.A. Lange agreement. There has been no effort by Wells Fargo to stand in the shoes of W.A. Lange, so there's no claim under that agreement.
Okay, although they do argue that that was assigned, whatever rights W.A. Lange had was assigned to Accordia.
Well, so the W.A. Lange agreement was not actually assigned to Accordia. And that's not the issue in this case as to whether that agreement was assigned. That agreement is off the table. The only thing this case is about is that Accordia agreement. But the difference for Mr. Galeotto, I believe your question was, well, he already had one, so what's so different? What's so different is that he had chosen to sign a non-compete agreement with W.A. Lange because they provided it to him well in advance of his start date. They gave him an actual copy of it. This is in the record. They also told him there would be an opportunity for ownership. And it was a small company where he saw himself staying there for 5 years and becoming an owner. That's a different scenario from when you have Accordia, a national broker, who's telling him, if you want to get your paycheck for the last 2 weeks that you've already worked, you need to sign this agreement. So we gave the district court two different paths to get to our result on the consideration issue. And the district court chose path number one, but I want to make sure I talk about path number two. Path number one was the district court looked at the plain language of the agreement and said, I'm going to take this agreement at face value because it's drafted by the party trying to enforce it, and I'm not going to allow Wells Fargo to get all the benefits of a retroactive employment date without also imposing on them the responsibilities that come with it. In a nutshell, that's the district court's order, and we believe that this court should affirm.
Well, I mean, how could they have, okay, fair enough. How could, I guess it's Accordia, have done that on January 1? I mean, the main issue I have and what I've wrestled with in this case is, you know, when a company is purchasing another company and wants to have, you know, its own employment agreement, restrictive, covenant, non-compete, how else could this have been occurred? I mean, the closing didn't occur until the 13th. They couldn't, you know, he couldn't have, you know, Accordia couldn't have contacted him prior because the old non-compete is in effect. You know, when the closing occurred, and you know, Lange is no longer exists and Cordia is, it's like, okay, as of that date, we're gonna have you sign this new employment agreement. I mean, how could this have been structured to within the context of a asset purchase agreement and still have allowed Wells Fargo to have a non-compete in a good non-compete on the first day of its existence?
Yes, it could be done the way it is done almost every day of the week. And that's to
me.
When you know the closing is going to occur. So the announcement came in December 1999. That's when W.A. Lange announced it had sold to Accordia and there would be a closing. At that time, that is when you present employees with the employment agreement if it's going to contain a non-competition agreement. And you tell them, here's your offer of employment, you give them time to review it, you give them time to negotiate it, you give them time to consult with a lawyer, but you make the offer contingent on closing. So that way you're not binding yourself to an employee if ultimately somehow the closing falls through. That's how it's done all the time. That's how it was done when USI purchased Wells Fargo. And we've cited in the record the managing director of Wells Fargo's office, his testimony, where he said it was the same procedure. It was announced well in advance that USI would be buying Wells Fargo. He was given a copy of a non-compete agreement months in advance that was contingent on the closing. That's the way to do it. It's actually quite simple. There's reasons that companies don't do that. And part of the reason that may have been at play here is that they want a smooth transition without any question, because the sellers have a earnout provision. And that's what was happening here with Mr. Weifel and Mr. Rechteen. They had millions of dollars that they weren't going to get paid as part of that sale unless they kept revenues that next year at the same level they had been at previously. So there is a reason to shortcut the process, to tell employees, don't worry, your job is safe, nothing's going to change, and then shift them over to the new company without a whole lot of discussion or debate. So I want to talk for a minute about the second path we gave the district court that he didn't go down, which is frankly the easier path on consideration. I think it doesn't deal with this retroactivity issue. So if we take Wells Fargo's version of events, which is that we disregard the retroactive language, we forget the fact that he in effect became an employee of January 1, we look just at January 14th. As I've already stated, Mr. Galeotto was an employee of Accordia on that day. He could not have been working for W.A. Lange, and no one has testified that he was in fact working for W.A. Lange on the 14th. If that's the day that the offer was made, if that email at 7:59 a.m. is the offer of employment, it needed to say, number one, you need to sign a non-competition agreement as a condition of employment. And number two, it had to attach a copy of the agreement so that Galeotto could consider its terms. The email does not do that. And the line of cases this falls under is National Recruiters versus Cashman, Minnesota Supreme Court, 1982, Midwest Sports Marketing, this court's decision in 1996, and then Safety Center, which was this court's decision in 2017. And if you read those three cases in sequence, you find that the rule is very well established. The rule is, if an employer is going to offer new employment and make a non-compete a condition of that, the employer has to disclose that with the offer of employment. It can't be after. It can't be later that day. Midwest Sports Marketing is probably the best example, because in that case, the employee was told before their first day of work that they would have to sign a non-compete agreement, but the employee was not provided with a copy of the actual terms. On the first, after he started, within the first few days or a week, he was provided with a copy of the agreement and he signed it.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. That's what those cases say. And Safety Center, I believe turned on the fact that he had already accepted the offer of employment, and then they sprung the non-compete on him a couple of days later. I mean, here, and this is Lange's email Accordia has issued paychecks which are contingent upon your accepting their offer of continued employment, and we've already talked about continued employment, but I mean, it does say, and here I'm looking at the employment agreement, in consideration of your employment with Accordia, you agree that if your employment should terminate for any reasons, you will not at any time during the period of termination or during the period of 2 years after such termination, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, doesn't that employment agreement make clear that the non-compete is part of it and that the offer, you know, you don't get one without the, you don't get the offer without the other?
If that agreement had been provided to him at the time the offer was made, then perhaps.
You mean but, the non-compete?
Yes, the non-compete agreement, yes. But that is not what happened. He came into work on the 14th. He started working. He got this email, nothing attached. He started working for Accordia. That is acceptance of an employment offer. The copy of the agreement didn't come to him until sometime later that same day on the 14th. That was too late. Just like Safety Center, the offer had been made and it had been accepted. The offer was the combination of Weifel and Rechtin telling him in December, your job is safe, nothing's going to change after the closing. Then he comes to work after the closing, and they then say to him, we are now Accordia. And to get your paycheck, you'll need to sign an agreement. He started working for Accordia. That's the acceptance. So offer acceptance is done, just like in Safety Center, before he ever gets a copy of the agreement.
Well, I mean, he showed up on the 14th. I agree. I got that.
And he worked. I mean, there's no dispute in the record. He worked well before he got that non-compete agreement. And so if you follow...
He got it that day, though.
He got it that day, but that's not enough. And Safety Center said it's not enough. That's the first thing the person did when I think it was a she, maybe, got to the office. She went through new hire paperwork and then was presented with the agreement. This court said that is not enough. First day doesn't count. It has to be when the offer is made, when the offer is accepted. Here, the offer was made in December 1999 and then confirmed in the email on the morning of January 14th.
So, wait a minute now. When are you saying this offer was made?
In December 1999, when Mr. Weifel and Mr. Rechtin said to Mr. Galeato, there's going to be a sale, your job is safe, everything is going to stay the same, except the ownership opportunity won't be there with Accordia.
Oh, go ahead.
But the email he did receive indicated there was going to be an employment agreement. And I mean, since he had already signed one that had a non-compete agreement, you know, wasn't he on notice when he continued working that day that he's going to have to sign this agreement as a condition of his continued working there? He already had been advised of that. Why wouldn't that be sufficient notice? I mean, because I think the underlying thought in those other cases you mentioned is that you don't want to just spring this on an employee. Here, they told him from the get-go, if you want to continue with us, you've got to sign this. The fact that he didn't, you know, get a copy of it until later in the day, I mean, he kind of assumed that risk. He's not in the same position as someone who quits a job, moves across the country, starts a job, and then all of a sudden they go, oh, by the way, here's this employment agreement.
Let me ask you, make sure I understand your argument. Yeah. You're saying that on the 14th he had already started working for them, was already employed by them. The email comes during that day. He's already working for them. So that employment agreement and the restrictive covenant needs new consideration.
I'm out of time. Can I answer both questions?
Please, okay. Yes. Okay. Please do, Ms. Abadi.
Yes, it needs new consideration because the employment relationship was already formed. You can't be working for a company if you're not employed. He was employed by Accordia when he began working. And by the way, Mr. Weifel's email specifically says your continued employment. So even Mr. Weifel's email contemplates he's already an employee of Accordia, and this is about continued employment with Accordia. So yes, you've summarized our position that by the time he gets a copy of the agreement, he's already employed, and then there needs to be independent consideration. And can I answer your question,
yes,
Your Honor?
Yes. There were two emails, right?
There were two.
I mean, because the way you're describing it, the first email was what he got the first minute he walked in. He opened his computer. The deal is done. And if you want to keep working here, if you want to continue on in this new, with this new employer, you're going to have to sign this employment agreement. But it wasn't attached. And then the, and as I understand it, it was attached later?
No, it was hard copy handed out.
Oh, it's hard copy.
Yep.
Okay.
But, yes, but, it was hard copy handout. There's just one email.
But the first email told him about the agreement, that had to be signed. Am I correct?
Yes. To answer, that relates to your earlier question. Midwest Sports Marketing. This court said, telling an employee that you need to sign a non-compete agreement is not enough to put them on notice. And that fits squarely, Your Honor, with what you had suggested a moment ago, which is, isn't it enough for a courtier to tell him you're going to need to sign an employment agreement? I mean, he had notice, and he continued working. He could have asked for it. Those were the same arguments rejected in Midwest Sports Marketing.
Well, I agree with you. You have to get and sign the employment agreement the first day before you accept the offer. I agree with you there. But I'm not sure this is quite that this fact pattern completely. Well, I mean, all these cases always are so, you know, slightly different from the last one, and this one is slightly different from, you know, apparently all the non-compete cases I've been on. So what is the fatal flaw? Is that they didn't give it to them when they sent the email, or that he'd already started, or both?
It's both. Okay. I would say the most fatal flaw is
But I mean, he clearly wasn't working for, or
is it W.A. Ling.
He clearly wasn't working for Accordia on January 1st through 13th, correct?
Correct.
And he was only working for Accordia on January 14th, right?
Correct.
And that's the day he got the non-compete, and the offer, or the, what is this, and the agreement specifically states, in consideration of your employment, you agree, you know, that you're going to, you know, be bound by the non-compete. I mean, it's only when you accept that, or when you sign the employment agreement, that you've accepted the offer, isn't it?
No.
Okay, why not?
It is not. Because he was already working for Accordia before he signed the agreement. He signed the agreement on the 18th, and right. That's when Accordia signed the agreement as well. If that's when he accepted the offer, then we're back in retroactivity land. Who was he working for on the 14th through the 18th? He was already working for Accordia on the 14th. That's well before he accepted the terms of that written employment agreement. And so the fatal flaw here is that he wasn't told the minute he arrived on the 14th, stop, don't work, we're making you an offer of employment. Here's the offer in writing. It contains a non-compete agreement, which, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree that it's the same as the W.A. Lang agreement. It's a different agreement. It has a different scope now that you're working for a national brokerage firm. They should have given him the agreement and given him a chance to decide whether he wanted it or not. They didn't do that. They didn't give him a copy of it. They just tried to slide everybody over with this email. And then they did a second thing, which is probably the most... I'll use the word reprehensible thing, is they said you won't get your check unless you sign it. So we have two things going on here, that they didn't provide a copy of the actual terms, and then bundle that with the fact that they told him you'll get an agreement, still they don't say anything about a non-compete, you'll get some employment agreement, and if you don't sign it, you don't get your check. So those two things combined, I would say, are the most fatal flaws. And I'm well over my time, so thank you for allowing me to answer those questions.
Thank you very much, counsel. Ms. Schwartz, you'll have the last word, please.
Thank you. I want to address counsel's arguments. Respondents first argue that Galeotto was employed by Accordia when he showed up at work on January 14th. This argument is wrong. Counsel incorrectly describes Mr. Weifel's testimony. Not Weifel nor anyone else has ever testified that on the evening of January 13th, after the closing of the asset sale, anybody at W.A. Lang started calling up the W.A. Lang employees and telling them that the asset sale had closed and that they were fired. That's not what happened. Rather, the asset sale closed. The effect of the asset sale, as described in the purchase agreement, was the sale of the designated assets, and W.A. Lang, as a company, continued to exist. It had 3 years of earnout to keep in mind. It didn't go away as a company. Now, I say that telling you what Weevil did testify to, which was that the W.A. Lang employees were not long for this world. Obviously, the horizon of W.A. Lang was quite short, and they were to be terminated, but they weren't terminated on the evening of January 13th, nor were they terminated on the morning of January 14th. We have the January 14th email. We all know exactly what it says. The words of that email are not in dispute. So they were not employed. They were employed by W.A. Lang at close of business on January 13th. You're not fired as an employee until you actually are terminated. There's nothing in the purchase agreement that effectively terminated them. Counsel next says that.
Then on the 14th, who was he working for?
When he showed up at work, he was working for W.A. Lang. He received that January 14th email first thing when he arrived at work, and that notified him that he would need to sign the employment agreement, which I will mention is an extant document at that time. It wasn't something that was to be drafted in the future. It had, in fact, been distributed around the office to those who had already been there. So he had, at the time of the offer, he was put on notice, you're going to have to sign this employment agreement. He had access to the employment agreement, and it's undisputed that he, in fact, received the employment agreement that day. And in point of fact, remember, the employment agreement with Accordia is almost word for word identical to the W.A. Lang restrictive covenant. I mean, these are the almost mirror image versions of the same document. You can do a visual comparison, but they are. There's very little difference. Galeotto's counsel also argues that there must have been an offer prior to January 14th because at his deposition, Jim Richtine testified that there was this December 1999 group meeting at W.A. Lang where they assured W.A. Lang employees that their jobs were safe. As a matter of law, of course, whatever statements W.A. Lang made to its employees were not offers of employment. First, you know, general assurances of job safety aren't offers of employment. There's a large body of law. One case is Lindgren versus Harmon Glass. Second, whatever statements W.A. Lang employees like Rick Weevil and Richtine made in December 1999 before the closing of the asset sale can be imputable to one company and one company only, and that's W.A. Lang. It's not a representation of Accordia and can't be imputed to it. And finally, as a factual matter, they're wrong on their characterization of the Richtine deposition testimony. Counsel asked Richtine at the deposition whether W.A. Lang was extending offers of employment to W.A. Lang employees, and Richtine clearly testified that the answer to that was no. They told the W.A. Lang employees that offers would be coming from Accordia if the transaction closed. So in all ways, their testimony and characterization is incorrect. It doesn't match up with the testimony that was actually provided. And these are all cited
Let me ask you this, Ms. Schwartz.
Sure.
What if on January 14th, which I guess was the Friday, there's an email from Accordia saying, welcome new employees to Accordia. You know, we're glad you're here. You know, it's going to be great. And then on the following Monday, they had said, oh, here's an employment agreement with a restrictive covenant. You've got to sign it now. Would that, under that factual scenario, would this restrictive covenant have been valid as being ancillary to the offer of employment?
I think you're getting into the national recruiter's vein of cases, right? Which is really a vein of cases that say it's a not a huge surprising proposition. Employers can't bait and switch employees. They can't make an offer of employment, induce the employee to the prospective employee to rely on it, quit their job, and then after the employee has started with the new employer, change the rules of the game and say, huh, well, did I mention that there's a little non-compete here that you need to sign? That is not what happened here. Your, I think, hypothetical scenario runs a little bit into that. I think it would depend on the text of the email that was provided and if it put employees fairly on notice that they needed to sign a restrictive covenant as part of the offer. And in this case, it's very important to understand that that email, it did not have any of the terms of employment. It was not, there was nothing for Galeotto to accept other than the employment agreement. There is no other offer in the record. And, you know, respondents try to obfuscate that fact and say, yes, they accepted something previous, but I will tell you, there is not one thing in the record, not one offer, not one communication that they can point to where there are terms of employment that are conveyed. And the deposition testimony is unanimous. Jim Richtine, Gary Weifel, and Angelo Galeotto all testified that there was no employment between Accordia and Galeotto prior to, or no agreement between Accordia and Galeotto prior to January 14th.
Thank you. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter was well argued by both parties and well briefed. We will issue our decision within 90 days.
It was, and I want to join with the compliment because it was very well briefed and argued today. Thank you.
So that being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.